You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where I don't have a clever opening because I'm tired as shit. As always, if you enjoy your trip into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. And if you'd like to tip your tour guides, there's always Patreon. Patreon.com/themidside. Help James maybe sort of keep the lights on. Joining me this trip via GChat, I got it right this time, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, it seems like we haven't recorded this in a while, but we had quite the adventure while we weren't recording.
We did have an adventure. We had an adventure in Boston, Beantown, City of Lights, the city Windy of, City.
Now I think you're just naming things about other cities.
Oh.
The Big Apple, yeah, well, 3 a.m.
The City of Industry. Yes, indeed. Yeah, we were in Boston. I was in Boston for like a friggin' week. I was in Connecticut.
You know, you can tell you were in Boston for a week because it was a friggin' week.
That's right. It was a wicked friggin' week in Boston. I was in Connecticut first with Midsiders Luke and Anna. We saw Adam Carolla do a live podcast at the Foxwoods Casino. And then I stayed the entire short week. It was a short work week, so I decided, why the hell not? I might as well stay in Boston for the week because Justin and I would then meet up in Boston the next Sunday to go to a Patriots game. And it was a delightful affair, one in which we met Tom Brady, hung out, had beers, and now we're best friends. That's what I like to fantasize about, but that's not what happened. But nonetheless, we had great tickets, great seats for a Boston Bengals game at home, Gillette Stadium, in Jersey. Crowd riled up for Brady's first game back from the Deflategate suspension. Tickets going for astronomical amounts of money. Experience.
Yeah, and funny enough, we actually were about three rows in front of two girls who were on Survivor. So that's how sort of hot of a ticket it was, I think you could say.
Yes, even C-list celebrities had to pay money to be there. What a riveting game.
But let that be known to anyone out there. That's how much Tom Brady distracts me. I didn't even know that these women who were on Survivor were three rows behind us because I never turned around to look behind me because I was too focused on Tom Brady.
That's right. And since Tom Brady's balls have added air to them, he's fucking dominated the league. Has anyone noted that?
Yeah, that, like, except since they're trying the NFL, they're trying to say what? He didn't do that well against Pittsburgh this past weekend.
He did. He didn't throw an interception. He did well. I mean, people dropped passes. Like, that's why it wasn't stellar. But okay, we're not going to get into football analysis. That's
Sure. Blame the Jewish guy. Blame Edelman. Fucking Nazi. Protect your pretty tall white guy, your perfect specimen, but blame the Jewish guy.
I'm going to blame the Jew and the African kid, Bolden. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad drop. Also joining us via GChat from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. And Elliot, after my adventures with Daniel, the Midside went to Orlando and had adventures with you.
It was a blast. I have wanted for years to like hang out with Justin at Disney World, and it was amazing. Justin will tell you, I've already been like trying to make plans for like a mid-side con, like here in Orlando, and just it would be amazing. Have all these mid-siders like just hang out at Disney World for like a weekend or something. But yeah, we had a great time. We went to the Celebration Town Tavern. We're going to give them a plug because they were really awesome to us. And we watched the Pats game with the Steelers. Well, Justin watched the Pats game. I watched my future husband, Rob Gronkowski, be amazing. and we had a great time.
Yeah, the Town Tavern is awesome. If you're ever in Orlando and you want a little slice of Boston or New England, go to the Town Tavern. It was like I was transported, the Celebration Town Tavern. It was like I was transported to New England, to where I was growing up. It was awesome. And yeah, Elliot was planning the whole time a Midside Con there. So if any Midsiders out there are interested in a Midside meetup in Orlando, let us know, because Elliot will plan it for us.
I think what this this excursion really teaches us is that Justin plans all of his vacations around Patriots games.
I plan everything around Patriots games. What Daniel's not telling you is I flew out Sunday night after the Patriots game. I made sure my flight was enough after it that I could drive to the airport after the game was over, because it was a 4 p.m. game. So I didn't actually get into L.A. until about midnight because of
that. But it was so fun, though. Like the tavern... and the tavern is in Celebration, so if you're in Celebration, Florida, definitely, like Justin said, you should check it out. But man, it was just packed with Patriots fans, and there was this little kid sitting behind us who was just cheering on Tom Brady, even when it wasn't Brady on screen. But it was so awesome to see kids being inspired, you know, by heroes. It was really cool.
Yeah, when LeGarrette Blount scored a touchdown, the kid was like, "Was that Tom Brady?" Yes, it's always Tom Brady.
It's always Tom Brady.
Unfortunately, it's always Tom Brady isn't the answer for the news, but we'll try and provide you some answers in this week's The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
It's getting close to that time, gentlemen, that time when we can stop talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, at least as they pertain to each other. One of them will still be the president for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
but according to,
we're just done talking about one of them, not both of them.
But according to the Washington Post, the Fix blog, it's probably going to be Clinton that we're talking about for the next 4 years, because Donald Trump's chances of winning are approaching exactly 0%. The election is in 15 days. Is that true? Jesus Christ. So 15 days.
From
the electoral map.
It'll be 14 days from when this episode is posted.
That's right. 2 weeks. 2 weeks notice, America. Get your shit together and get a new job. The election is 14 days away, and the electoral map just keeps looking grimmer and grimmer for Donald Trump. Nevada, which was maybe a toss-up state, is now leaning Democratic. Virginia leaning Democratic. Florida leaning Democratic. Fucking Texas, which should be a safe state for Republicans, is just barely Republican. It's just barely edging over the Republican edge. And then, of course, there is Utah, ladies and gentlemen, that Trump will almost certainly not win, if you believe the poll numbers, where Evan McMullen is leading in the polls. Who's Evan McMullen? Good question. No one knows. But he is beating Donald Trump in Utah right now, and Hillary Clinton. And it's looking pretty fucking brutal for Trump. Basically, if you project now the states that are leaning Democratic, if they go Democratic, Hillary Clinton will win a shocking 323 electoral votes. Donald Trump will win 180. Mind you, it only requires 270 to win the presidency.
What's the most the candidate has ever won?
Pretty darn near all of them. Reagan won everything except Minnesota and D.C. I think that's the biggest electoral landslide in history. So,
and wouldn't this be history if a third party candidate won a state?
It would not be history. It'd be sort of modern history. So even Perot didn't win a state, but people like George McGovern, who was a racist Dixiecrat, won a few states. So it wouldn't be unprecedented. And of course, a third party candidate, Abraham Lincoln, did win the presidency. So, but nonetheless, in a certain sense, it would be historic in that in the modern era, you don't see third parties winning states. So good on Egg if he wins Utah. That'll be awesome. If I was there, I'd vote for him. but I'm in Virginia, so I'm voting JG.
Vote no.
Great.
Vote no 2016.
Great headline in the Onion today. I think the Onion should, by the way, it should just close down and become a Twitter account, because their headlines now are so good and their stories are so bad. Anyway, the headline was a picture. It was a picture of Gary Johnson, and it was it's an op-ed. Gary Johnson. Yeah, I too wish I was better at this.
That's funny.
So that was a great headline. Anyway, but Donald Trump, not the only one in the news this week, of course.
Well, first of all, I have a question. Isn't Donald Trump saying that all these polls are rigged and they're fixed, and that's why they're saying he has no chance?
So, yes, Donald Trump has played the rigged card, and there's some... It depends on what your meaning of is, but it really does depend on what your meaning of rigged is. If you mean that there is someone purposely mastering this to make it look worse for Donald Trump, the answer is probably yes. If you mean there's a concerted effort to undermine Trump in some official capacity, i.e. Throw his votes in the garbage or not count votes for him or whatever it is, it's probably no. The way in which it is rigged is that almost all these polls oversample Democrats. They almost always do. I don't know why it is that they do that. And so the Democrats do way better in the polls than an election day. It tightens up quite a bit. That being said, if this tightens up quite a bit, Hillary Clinton still easily wins.
Can you not ever say tighten up quite a bit and Hillary Clinton in the same sentence ever again?
Just think of it in the context of Botox and her face.
Okay, that makes it a little more palpable.
Yeah, Elliot, do you have a prediction for palpable? Do you think do you have a prediction for who's going to win the great state of Florida?
I'm honestly, it's hard to tell. I think it's going to be close again. I think Hillary is going to win, but I don't think that she's going to win by a lot. It's going to be pretty close.
I will say the place where I saw the most Trump signs is Florida. But then again, I do live in California, so. Yeah.
But you notice not a lot of Hillary signs. And I pointed this out to Justin when he was here, and he noticed it too. They're really, in fact, I think that one girl that we saw while we were taking the boat over to Epcot, I think she was the only one that had like a Hillary shirt on.
Yeah, and also up in that, what was it, the Winter Park area, where they have too much money and feel guilty about it, there was some Hillary stuff up there.
Gotcha. Oh, by the way, probably the largest electoral victory in history would have to be George Washington. Didn't he win 100% of the electoral votes in the first election?
Yeah, but weren't there like 3 electoral votes at that point?
There were like 70.
So yes, now I feel like an NFL statistician. Yes, percentage-wise, George Washington, but most number of votes, Reagan. Fair?
I think, I don't quote me on that, but I think so, yes.
So it's sort of like the difference between Otto Graham and Tom Brady.
What?
Yes. Tell us about Hillary.
Okay. Fuck you. Okay. So Hillary's in the news this week because turns out all the pay-for-play rhetoric that was going around that she said was bullshit, it's probably not entirely bullshit. This comes from a leaked Podesta email when Hillary Clinton was trying to get $12 million for her family's charitable foundation from King Mohammed VI of Morocco, and her campaign was freaking out about it. In fact, campaign manager Robbie Mook and longtime Clinton confidant John Podesta thought the deal, in which Clinton had committed to speak at an event for the king on the condition of his $12 million donation, would look bad. Clinton aide Huma Abedin, i.e., if you believe Alex Jones, her lesbian lover, tried to explain that it was simply too late to back out. This quote, this was HRC's idea. Our office approached the Moroccans, and they 100% believed they were going to do this at her request. The king had personally committed approximately $12 million, both for the endowment and to support the meeting. It will break a lot of China to back out now, and we've had so many opportunities to do this in the past few months. So why is this bad? Because one, we're not exactly sure when this email was sent, meaning it could have been while she was still Secretary of State, although the campaign is claiming it wasn't. But even if it wasn't, two, she's clearly running for president at this point. And it sort of looks bad where it's like, yeah, this head of the foreign government gives me a bunch of money. I'll come over there and speak. And then, you know, maybe we'll talk about some issues that are going to get, you know, resolved around the Moroccan government while I'm in office. So even, by the way, this is
so Morocco's now a special interest group in America.
Well, if you're Hillary Clinton, all countries that are willing to give you money are a special interest group in America. That's kind of the problem.
Agree.
And this is not some, I mean, the sort of attack initially comes from Fox News, but it's the Huffington Post here and their senior political economy reporter, Zach Carter, basically saying, this looks pretty bad overall. So we're not reporting from some fringe site or some right wing nut job site.
Why does Hillary's campaign insist on using email? You think they would have put an embargo on email at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd think carrier pigeon, probably a better route for her.
Or just they should all get on Snapchat and she's like Snapchatting with the king of Jordan or the king of Morocco.
Snapchat. Hillary Clinton on Snapchat. That's also another frightening prospect. When the Democrats get near the Snapchat and the picture texting, it doesn't go well. Anthony Weiner and the baby pic.
Yeah, but they had that. If you follow, they have those stories on Snapchat. During the conventions, the people were Snapchatting from the conventions. They were snapping from the conventions. And I think they did a couple with Hillary.
I'm worried. Didn't she make a joke at some point that she should switch to Snapchat? At which point you wanted to kick her right between the legs and be like, you are not allowed to joke about this, you lying bitch.
I mean, that sounds like my response to everything she says, so yes, but I don't know. If she had mentioned Snapchat, I think it would have been a bigger deal.
All right.
Somebody check us out there. Where's an ombudsman?
Hillary Clinton mentioned Snapchat.
Really? We're Bill Burr-ing it right now?
I remember that she definitely mentioned Pokemon Go. She tried to make that horrible joke where she was like, I don't know what this thing is, but you should definitely Pokemon go to the polls in November and vote for me.
Put a fucking Squirtle at the polls, lady. That's not even rare. I don't know. What's a rare Pokemon they can put at the polls? I don't fucking know.
Pika something. Here we go. Hillary Clinton mocks email controversy, recently started Snapchat because, quote, those messages disappear all by themselves. She joked.
Fuck. I rescind my joke because Hillary Clinton already made it before me, which makes it super lame.
Yes, indeed. Hillary endorses Snapchat. I love it. Those messages disappear all by themselves. Yeah. So there it is. Moving on.
What's Hillary Clinton's, Snapchat, yeah, I'm going to send her a dick pic.
She's not getting any from Bill, that's for sure. But Bill, speaking of Bill Clinton, this next story. my first virtual reality groping. I know, three politics stories in a row. It's crazy. This is from Jordan Bellemeyer, I guess is a woman, from Mike.com.
This is a politics story?
That was a joke.
Oh.
Okay. See how that works? It's humor. No. It's great.
Don't ask me. I have the same sense of humor as Hillary Clinton, apparently.
Apparently. Hold on. One, I feel like I'm hosting this entire show myself this week. Elliot.
I'm here.
You all right?
I'm good. I'm just kind of like, I'm just entertaining myself listening to you two talk.
Need a Gatorade?
Gatorade? Yeah, I could do with a Gatorade.
Hey, right, I like it. I don't even have to make the homophobic slurs, we're doing well.
Not only was there a homophobic pun in there, but Gatorade was invented in Florida, right?
Florida Gators, baby. That's
Gainesville,
right.
Though, yeah, not Orlando. Fuck you, F.
My first virtual reality groping. Quote, last week I was groped in virtual reality.
Oh my God.
Did you know that could happen? I didn't, but now I'm all the wiser. Holy Jesus. Yes, we are actually doing this article on this show. Okay, so she explained she was
visiting her brother-in-law. Be careful, if you say actually blah, blah, blah. Doing, they may think you're actually, like, doing something wrong.
I'm mansplaining this article to everyone.
Something right or other.
Absolutely. So she was trying the HTC Vive, a virtual reality
HRC
system.
HRC Vive?
Yes. No. And they were playing a game called Quiver, which is apparently you're in a snowy medieval fortress and you have a bow and arrow and you're killing zombies because that's what they did.
Oh, I thought like Quiver being groped. I thought it was something else. I was like, sounds like you were asking for trouble playing a game called Quiver.
Yeah, no, this is not the Donald Trump version. So
it could be the Game of Thrones version. You shoot stuff with some arrows and then rape someone.
Shoot and rape. That's all Game of Thrones is. So she's doing a lot of things. She's having fun, whatever. And then, like, her brother tells her friend to, like, walk off the edge of the cliff. She's really scared. She does, but she floats in the air. She says, quote, "I was a god. Virtual reality had won me over lock, stock, and barrel. Or so I thought."
Wait, I'm confused. Can you explain to me what's going on? Her character is floating over the abyss right now? Is that what's going on?
Yes, you walk up to the edge, but when you walk off the edge, you don't actually fall in the game. You just keep walking on air. So she loved it until
I feel like that's like a really like minor effect in a game. Like, isn't that like in the 90s?
Yes, but this time the screen is on your head.
Because the screen is really close to your eyes, it's more impressive.
That's right. That's right. I don't know. I've tried virtual reality so many times, I find it fucking stupid. There I go, old man Richards. "In between a wave of zombies and demons to shoot down," this is from the article, "I was hanging out next to Big Bro 442, waiting for our next attack. Suddenly, Big Bro 442's disembodied helmet faced me dead on. His floating hand approached my body, and he started to virtually rub my chest. Stop! I must have laughed from the embarrassment and the ridiculousness of the situation. Women, after all, are supposed to be cool and take any form of sexual harassment with a laugh." Holy shit. "This goaded him on, and even when I turned away from him, he chased me around, making grabbing and pinching motions near my chest."
This guy's name is Big Bro?
Yes, 442.
This isn't real. This is made up.
Emboldened, he even shoved his hand toward my virtual crotch and began rubbing.
He grabbed her by the virtual pussy?
Yes. "There I was, being virtually groped in a snowy fortress with my brother-in-law and husband watching." So here, she goes on, etc. But she says, "Remember that little digression I told you about how the 100-foot drop looks so convincing? Yeah, guess what? The virtual groping feels just as real." Let that sink in, because here's the non sequitur.
Well, that's I'm going to let it sink in and say that's actually a fair statement. The 100-foot drop is not real. So, yes, the groping feels just as real. Not real.
Very good picking apart the logic there. Very good. The virtual groping feels just as real. Long pause. "Of course, you're not physically being touched. Just like you're not actually 100 feet off the ground. But it's still scary as hell. So it feels just as real, except that it's not real at all." Excellent. Good. Glad we got that off our chest.
That's like roller coasters. Like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh shit, this is scary. But then when you become an adult, you realize they're designed for you not to get hurt. So there's not really a reason to get scared.
Yes. So here's she goes on. "What's worse is that it felt real, violating. This sounds ludicrous to anyone who hasn't stood on that virtual reality ledge and looked down. But if you have, you might start to understand. The public virtual chasing and groping happened a full week ago, and I'm still thinking about it. Maybe it's because you're a writer and you're a social justice woman, and you have to think of something to write in your stupid tech article. That's why you're thinking about it." And here's the coup de grace. This is where everything has to go, right? By the way, prefacing this paragraph. "As VR becomes increasingly real, how do we decide what crosses the line from an annoyance to an actual assault? Eventually, we're going to need rules to tame the wild, wild west of VR multiplayer." Let me repeat that because it bears repeating. "Eventually, we're going to need rules to tame the wild, wild west of VR multiplayer. Something leads me to believe here that that Jordan doesn't mean like that these games are going to not allow people to grope each other. I suspect she means laws here when she says rules.
I will immediately pledge to vote for any candidate that adds virtual reality legislation to their platform. Pro or negative. Yeah, for laws or against laws. Just because I want to see that happen.
We have this discussion of not giving legislators ideas. They're just furiously writing. Quote, she ends, or is this going to be yet another space that women do not venture into?
I think this is the story that breaks the mid-side. I think this is finally the story that there can be no more farce after this. It is the most farcical that we could ever do. I thought the girl that almost killed her mom over the iPhone thing, I thought that might have been it. I kind of think this might be the one. The one that's just too much of a farce that it breaks the mid-side.
The question that she asks is so beyond farce into the realm of primacy of consciousness that my brain feels like it's physically just snapped in half as I read the question, which is what I read earlier, but I'll reiterate. As VR becomes increasingly real, as virtual reality becomes increasingly real, comma, how do we decide what crosses the line from an annoyance to an actual assault?
I mean, that's a floating abstraction when you don't realize what virtual reality actually is, right?
Yes. It is the floatingest of abstractions.
So I have a question.
She laid a big, giant, circular floater into that toilet of abstractions.
I have a question.
Please.
If somebody has never had cyber sex, are they still a cyber virgin?
Oh my god. You know how... Do you know how you stop this attack from happening? One, I mean, what? Okay.
Well, don't you just disconnect their internet?
You just take the glasses off and it's gone forever. Oh, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
How dare you infringe upon her right to wear those glasses? You are victim blaming her by saying having the glasses on put her in danger.
Now, can we give her any benefit of a doubt at all for anything?
I don't understand the question. No?
So what I mean is, like, in the broadest possible sense, could we acknowledge, like, that, yes, virtual reality will have its trolls, non-virtual internet reality has its trolls.
I mean, I feel like you're getting into the South Park arc of the season, basically, when you're asking that question.
Yes. So, look, dickish people will be in every medium that exists from here on out. And it is something that we all have to get used to and how we deal with it on our own terms. And yes, these games, of course, should have some sort of mechanism for reporting, like this guy who's being a douche and interfering with the gameplay. That could be something that is a legitimate concern. But when we cross the line, to use her language, virtual annoyances into real-world punishment, into saying that, for instance, a troll in the virtual reality world should be charged with some sort of actual assault, we have crossed a philosophical and political line that is remarkable in our day, that is remarkable for its disconnect from actual reality.
Well, and what if there was like a set of laws for the virtual world and a set of laws for the real world? So this is like Second Life is basically what she's referring to, right? Second Life is where you could go, be these avatars and go around and like basically do nothing. Like, what was the point of Second Life? Do you know?
It was for people who couldn't accomplish anything in their first life.
But my point is, like, if you virtually assault someone, your avatar gets sent to virtual jail. So if you virtually assault someone, send that person in virtual reality to virtual reality jail. So anytime they log into virtual reality for the next 5 years, the only thing that their device is allowed to see, their account is allowed to see, is the jail cell. Problem solved.
I like this. I like where your head is. I like where this is going. This would mean, though, that our online avatars would have to be connected to us in some way.
Social security number.
That has no implications for fraud whatsoever.
No, come on. You already know. No, seriously. You've never thought about the fact that at some point they're just going to give everyone a cell phone number and it's their social security number at birth?
No. No, I haven't, Orwell. What's you lay up at night thinking about?
How to take over the world?
I guess we'll get into that later.
I kind of wish I would have sat at the Patriots game with the two of you and listened to you guys engaging in this kind of conversation. I'm sure it would have been a ball.
You don't understand. Dude, Elliot, two girls from Survivor were behind us and I didn't see them. We were not talking about any of this. We were just watching the game.
Justin was shockingly more coherent at the Patriots game, I think. It's like he was focused. Like, for the first time, he was just, like, laser-focused on the thing.
I was laser-focused like, on the thing where it's it only is in six-second bursts.
That's right. Yeah. So, anyway. Moving on. Red State. Great article that Elliot submitted. Entitled, "We Desperately Need Men to Return Society's Social..." I'm sorry. We'll just take this again.
Right, nah, I'm not going to cut it. Just keep going.
3, 2, 1. Here we go. "We desperately need men to return social, political, and cultural front." Fine. Did I read that correctly?
"We desperately need men to return society's social, political, and cultural front." Elliot, you want to read it now?
Look, wait a minute. What does that mean? We desperately need men to return society's...
Bring it back! That's what they
I thought
mean.
It meant... I thought we... I see, when I first read this, I inserted another two. I read it as to return to society's social, political, and cultural front.
The dude just wants us to bring sexy back, all right?
Okay. Now that we've done the rhetorical analysis of this headline... This
still
is what you
more
get
coherent than the last story.
This quality analysis you will not find anywhere else. Ladies and gentlemen, I dare you to try. It's not going to happen.
Was that an Obama impersonation?
Let me be clear. I did my Obama at work today and it killed. Anyway, okay.
Bin Laden? It killed Bin Laden?
Zing. "Perhaps you felt like I have," the article starts. "There's something less wholesome about the world as of late, and while it's been fully identifiable in 2016, it's been building for some time. There's been an influence missing, one that's needed to balance the world." Picture Jedi and Sith when anyone says something like that. And then the next sentence is, "It's a force that's being rejected outright by a populace that has allowed itself to be led by the nose."
Hey, you're the one who's okay with the fucking Jedi being a woman in the new movie.
This is my fault, you're saying?
I don't know.
"It's a force that's being rejected outright."
There were Jedi women. There have been Jedi women.
Yeah. Hello.
Dude, seriously.
Hello.
I mean, we all know Luke's a little bitch, but he's not a woman.
All right. I'm done.
I'm just
the article is
Star
about
Wars.
How men need to fucking man up and be part of society again. Here's the money paragraph that gets into the controversy. It's a little long, but it's worth it. Here we go.
That's what she said.
"Firstly, men have become afraid to stand up to women overall. Since we were small, we've been shown videos and images of men cowering before upset women and asking permission of our wives to do things that make us happy. We've been told we're far less intelligent than women, that it's backed up in pop culture with television and movie characters. What's more, we're told that we must accept abuse from women, be it mental or physical, and we had better not return in kind. The former we must shrug off, accept the excuse that women are just crazy like that, and bend to whatever we're subjected to. The latter is so written off by society that some even view it as humorous when men are subjected to physical abuse. Passive, nice, and harmless. The brutal reality is that men are anything but, and here's where it gets controversial, it's not our natural state. Feminists, when they say that masculinity is dangerous, it is. But we need to put aside the notion that danger is solely a bad thing. Danger isn't inherently good or bad. It can be utilized for either. A dangerous man may choose to prey on a woman, and she may call out for a dangerous man to come protect her. One man is utilizing his inherent danger for evil, the second for good. Both these men in these examples are dangerous, but it wouldn't do to call both men bad for being so. Wow, I do not like the way he writes. Okay.
Well, can I just point something out here? We were just making fun of the fact of how laser-focused I was at the Patriots game. Well, a week later, yeah. sitting at the Celebration Town Tavern, during the game, Elliot was reading this article to me, and mm-hmm. then it got to this paragraph about the danger, and I was just so impatient because the game was on. I was like, that's fucking nonsense. I don't want to deal with this shit. Stop reading it. I don't care anymore.
No, but it wasn't the Pats game.
Elliot got offended because...
But it wasn't the Pats game. It was the Miami Dolphins versus the Buffalo Bills. It wasn't the Pats game that we were reading it.
So even just football on the TV does that to me. Because I wanted the Dolphins to win because it helped the Patriots.
Indeed. So, moving on. Here's the two things about this article, right? One, I can kind of get behind the thesis that men need to sort of step up culturally and stop being afraid to speak up, stop being afraid of masculine qualities in the culture. But the controversial part, and I think Justin's going to back me up on this, why are we conceding that the main masculine culture is danger? How does that help us rhetorically, and is that even true?
One, it's not true, and two, I have a question before we back that up. Isn't danger inherently bad? He claims that danger is not inherently bad. Isn't danger inherently bad?
I think it is. I think it is bad, and I think, you know, a very amateur rhetor would say something like, yeah, but when you get on like a roller coaster and you're going down a hill, it's dangerous, but it's a good dangerous.
I just said this.
Or into a haunted house.
It's not danger.
You're being chased by. I know. That's why I said it would be a bad rhetor to
right.
say that.
Because here's the thing. This is what I pointed out to Elliot when he presented this to me, and I was very impatient because there was men throwing a long ball at each other and actually doing something dangerous, which is actually sort of, there's a level of irony to that, is the definition of danger is able or likely to do harm. Now, especially with men nowadays, it has come to mean likely to do harm when we talk about things like rape culture. So I would argue, first of all, able or likely to do harm means that danger is inherently bad, because anything that's able or likely to do harm is bad for you. And then,
well,
if men are conceding...
Defend it a little bit.
What?
On that definition. To defend it a little bit on that definition, able to do harm is not the same as likely to do harm. A car is able to do harm.
Okay, so
but
fair.
It depends on its use.
Right.
Yeah.
So so that's the real thing here. Are they talking about men being able to do harm or likely to do harm? Because first of all, I would argue both genders are equally dangerous in different ways, because both genders are able to do harm to each other. As he pointed out in this article when he talked about psychological abuse that women do that we just excuse as a society. And as we've seen statistically, women commit domestic abuse physically as well. So women are able to do harm as well, so women are dangerous. The problem I have, though, is he's basically conceding the premise that men are likely to do harm, which is the premise of rape culture, and which is why masculinity is demonized. As I pointed out to Elliot, if we use, and this is something that came up multiple times when we were spending time together, is Pendjilet's benevolence premise, I am not dangerous because I do not think about harming people. It's just like, it doesn't happen. Like, if you piss me off enough, or if it gets really bad, that's an extreme I might think of, but like generally when I'm interacting in the world, my modus operandi is not, what damage can I cause? What harm can I cause?
Yeah.
I want to improve the world around me and help people.
To succinctly summarize what you're saying, I think that's the logical failing of the article. Because if he means likely to do harm, then he's conceding the premise of the left and of the feminists and whatever, and thus completely subverts what he's trying to do. And if he means able to do harm, then he's focusing on a non-essential. Can both are able to do harm, so is like I said, are fucking cars and baseball bats and guns and whatever, and that means nothing essentially.
I would actually even argue the idea that danger means able to do harm is a completely irrelevant concept, because name me something in the world that's not able to do harm.
A fluffy toothless bunny.
That sets standards of cuteness and beauty that other things like insects cannot always live up to.
I tried to think of something harmless.
Bunnies can kill, remember? Monty That's Python and the Holy Grail?
Yeah.
Come on, let's be real.
So I think the major failing of this article is that he's focusing on a non-essential, or maybe he's using the wrong word for what he means.
That's yes. what I think.
He means masculine strength.
Masculine yes. strength, even aggression, you could even say, would be a better word. Because I think what he's trying to bring about in this column, and I think that where he's kind of missing the mark, it's the idea that men are, they're active, they're strong, they are aggressive, they go after things, they're purposeful, they tend to think about outcomes, whereas women tend to think more about processes of things. And that's a very forward, I'm trying not to use the word phallic, because that's not what I mean. But it's very much a forward-oriented mentality that most men have. And then I think that there's really, I don't even think a sufficient concept for it, because I think strength is part of that. But I think that it's really the momentum. Men are creatures of momentum, of outcome, of focus, of just, doing what needs to be done. And I think you do need that. The culture is missing that in a lot of ways, and it does get ridiculed. But to put it under the umbrella concept of dangerous, I think that just misses the mark. And I think that that's really ultimately, and I follow this guy. I mean, I'm friends with him on Facebook, the author of the piece. And I mean, he's been kind of making his way around the edge of this subject. He's trying to figure it out. And you can read, if you read all of his writings, you can see that little by little, he's trying to piece something together. So I'm looking forward to see where he's going to go as he writes on this subject more. But I think that he's tapped into the wrong vein here.
Well, I think this is someone who hasn't yet been introduced to the concept of male disposability. And male disposability is essentially about harnessing the dangerousness of men to save women and children, essentially, and save women when it comes down to it. And I think that's what he hasn't been introduced to yet. I think if he knew that, he would be able to put this more into perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I do agree with sort of the off-root premise that there are qualities missing from society, and I would agree that aggression, boredness being one of them. I see this even in my workplace, which is much more conservative or traditional than most workplaces. It's still, a conversations are had in the workplace environment more feminine than I typically approve of. And when I'm used to working with and with Phila McAleer, the journalist, where we can go up to each other and be like, "That's shit. That's terrible. Why would you write that?" I'm going to break down into a pile of tears. It's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I just reread it. That is shit. I'll go ahead and redo that. Not that you have to be crass, that masculinity isn't crass, but the straightforwardness of it is something that I desperately kind of miss in a workplace environment.
I miss it just in general. Like, sometimes I know what I write is shit, and like, I'm waiting for people to point it out to see if they will or not. And I actually get annoyed when I hand something to people and they won't just directly say that part sucks. Because, like, I have an idea in my head that it sucks, and I'm just looking for that reinforcement. And then when somebody says it to me, they suck, so I go, yeah, you're right. That was the part. I mean, Daniel, how many times have I been like, yeah, that's the part that stood out in my mind is needing work?
Yeah, that's pretty much everything you do has one section where you're like, yeah, you're right. That doesn't read well.
Right. And when you tell me it doesn't, do I get offended? I just go, oh, no, you're right.
Yeah. Indeed. And I think that's a quality that, that is desperately needed, especially in the workplace, but in the culture as well.
Yeah, I mean, well. I agreed with what look, the beginning of his paragraph before he said the danger thing. Everything he said was spot on.
Yes, indeed. And to clarify, and not that we need to clarify, but we'll clarify nonetheless, or I will, that I don't necessarily mean Donald Trump.
I wondered if we were going to sidestep that.
Assertiveness and grabbing things and whatnot. That's not the kind of masculinity that I mean. And I think, in fact, Trump's is very faux masculinity. Trump's is very approve of me in this given situation kind of masculinity. I think it's very second-handed. That's not what I mean at all. So if you want what I mean, fucking read The Fountainhead.
Ooh, that's opening up a can of worms right there.
That's right. That's right. I picked. I was going back and forth in my head reading Atlas and Fountainhead, and I picked the Fountainhead on purpose. So,
what were you? What part of Atlas were you going to refer to?
I was going to say, then I was going to have to see. I didn't do this because I can't just say read Atlas Shrugged, because it's like, well, there are certain characters, and I was going to have to say read for the character Francisco D'Anconi in Atlas Shrugged, and then it's, but you can just read the Fountainhead, and you'll get what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean that's definitely. I mean that's a lost art, even in just I think talking to women. I think a lot of women are really taken aback if you like just go up to them and be like, hey, I think you're very attractive. I think they don't know how to handle that, actually.
I know, unless they're foreigners, but usually, you're right, American women just don't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So, Elliot, is this
Chandra
in the gay community?
What, the lack of masculinity? I've definitely noticed that there's... Yeah, it's one. I was actually joking kind of with Justin about this yesterday, that the idea that on Grindr, if you say that you're a masculine guy, you're looking for other masculine men, that you can be shouted down and criticized, you know, and accused of being a misogynist because you have the gall to say that you are interested in men that are a little bit more masculine. And that
Wait,
issue does come up.
If there's one group of people that hates women, shouldn't it be gays? Like, you guys have no use for them, right?
Well, I mean, to me, like, I think, I mean, that doesn't mean you have to hate him, obviously. You have no, but
I'm
I think
obviously
it's,
being facetious.
Yes. But I think that there is this element of, you know, we can never, there are some gay men who I think they just never, they feel like they can't be whatever ideal of man they have in their head. You know, they can't reach that concept of masculinity that they think that they're supposed to reach. So they kind of rebel against it. And so they go the opposite extreme and they become very campy and very, to me, my father has always raised me to believe that, you know, the determination of being a man, you know, had more to do with your moral compass. Do you, you know, does your yes mean yes? Does your no mean no? Are you there for the people in your life that are of value to you, the people that matter to you? He has always stressed that masculinity and being a man had to do with your ethics. It had to do with your moral compass more so than any superficial ephemera. So I've never felt that kind of antagonism against straight guys or very masculine men, but it is something that is very prevalent among the gay community. You do see a lot of gay guys who they kind of have this issue with, you know, with a gay man, even if he's openly gay, but the fact that he doesn't behave campy, they kind of regard him as being self-hating, or they regard him as being, you know, closeted, or whatever other words they want to use around him.
I'm going to build off of what you said to make a point, because what you said is very well taken, but I think what you're missing is sort of a less of all versus more of all thing, and I'm going to sound like such a, like a fucking twat right now, but... I think that some guys are threatened by masculinity because they can't be on top of Pride Rock. They can't be Mufasa. They can't be Scar for a limited amount of time. They can't be Simba, because I couldn't remember for a second the name of the fucking main character of The Lion King.
After where we were this weekend, how could you not remember?
That's because I fucking got Animal Kingdom out of my head. As you enter an Animal Kingdom, they're always playing the Circle of Life. Can you imagine working the front gate at Animal Kingdom and just fucking hearing the Circle of Life for every day for 8 hours a day?
I worked at Pirates of the Caribbean back when they played Pirates of the Caribbean over and over and over and over. Go, yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me. So, come on.
I had a hard enough time working at Walmart where they showed the same clips over again. Ogres are like onions. They stink constantly. And then, you're a wizard, Harry. Always, over and over again, all day. Anyway, so what I'm talking about is, if you're still in this jungle mentality where there has to be one alpha, well, I can understand that. Like, if I thought there had to be one alpha, I would be threatened by Rob Gronkowski. Because fuck that guy. Look at him. Look at how good he is. And look at how benevolent he is. I can't compete with that.
My favorite Rob Gronkowski story of the week is when a reporter said to him, you know, in this game, you have 68 touchdowns. His response was, you know, that's one away from 69 touchdowns.
That's my man.
That's such a funny line because it actually is just completely true, but is completely misinterpreted as well.
That's my man.
Oh, fucking Rob Gronkowski.
The only thing that would make it better is if he says that when he does 107 touchdowns. Yeah,
I would love if he became like a Marvel superhero. I would love to see Rob Gronkowski be like a DC or Marvel superhero in a movie, just like for 2 seconds.
Okay. Oh, who's the DC hero who's kind of like Superman but gets the short shrift? Not Shazam.
Booster Gold?
Gold something?
Booster Gold.
Yes, that
He's
guy.
Awesome.
He could be that
guy. I love Booster Gold, man. They never do right by him.
Isn't he time travel?
Does he?
Booster Gold? No, he doesn't. I don't think he time travels. At least not in any of the comics I've read.
Everything's time travel. Anyway, like my point I was saying. Remember, I was making a serious point here, guys? Guys, serious point.
I'll give you a transition, but sure. Go ahead and make your point.
Nowadays, we're more evolved where... Oh, I know I'm an individualist, but we can work together and not have one king of the jungle. So we don't need to have this giant fucking pissing match. We don't always have to be wearing our windbreakers to say who has the biggest dick.
Adam Carolla reference?
Yes.
Adam Carolla reference? Okay, got it. Excellent. Yeah, no, I concur with all that. That's true. And as a guy who I feel like is masculine, but I don't feel stereotypically masculine, we have to be able to work together because I'm not going to be the alpha male in any room.
Depending on what the alpha male qualities are in the room, you're not going to be the physical alpha male.
Well, I mean,
so you're not going to be the top, you're going to be the bottom. Is that what I'm hearing?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Or as I was going to say, I never expected to find myself in the position of alpha male in a given situation, except that in modern culture, I am more than I would have expected. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, so let's move on since everybody already wants to talk about entertainment. I don't have a fucking transition planned. Let's just go into the hopeful romantic with JML. Focused on. All right, I'm just going to hit the sound effect now because we don't have any reviews this week, so we're going to go right into it.
Trailer takedown.
I still love that sound effect. That it gets me going. not sure how. I should have admitted that, but okay. So, first trailer, remember, we're hugging or we're tackling. We have the latest Wolverine movie and possibly... the last Wolverine movie starring Hugh Jackman called Logan. This trailer seems to take place in a dystopian future, and it seems to be like The Road or the video game The Last of Us, featuring Hugh Jackman caring for a little girl who is similar to him, with Patrick Stewart looking really old, telling him to care for the little girl. Did that sum it up?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, also Johnny Cash.
Okay. So this looked like a good movie. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm totally in. And then I was like, oh, wait, it's a Marvel movie. Oh, yeah. Fuck that.
Well, no, it's owned by Fox.
No, I don't care. It's in the Marvel. It's a Marvel character.
So you're not objecting to the Marvel production team. You're objecting to Marvel in general.
Yeah.
Why?
It's gonna be bad. None of these movies have been good. Come on. None of these movies have been good. Maybe the first X-Men movie was an acceptable film because we got to see X-Men on screen. But after that, no.
So you're saying fuck no them. Marvel movie has been good, or none of the X-Men movies?
None of the X-Men movies have been good.
I enjoyed The Wolverine, one where he goes to Japan.
No.
And Deadpool. What about Deadpool?
I mean, it's fine, but...
So I take it you're tackling this?
I'm not even tackling. I'm like walking away in horror. Like, it's just not going to be a good movie. It's not.
Elliot?
I might hug it. It's the last one with Hugh Jackman. I'm going to go see it, and I'll be singing the score to Les Miserables the whole time. Every time he comes on screen, I'm just going to be like, who am I here? Can I condemn this man to slavery?
Who am I? I'm Wolverine.
Yeah. I can't wait. That's right, because I don't watch X-Men movies. I really don't. Like, I haven't even seen X-Men Apocalypse, which is probably one I would have most recently seen. But I don't watch X movies, but I probably will watch this one just because I do like Hugh Jackman a lot.
I'd rather they just showed Les Mis again.
Oh, me too.
My turn?
I get. No one cares, though. Not about you, about this movie.
I am going to hug this movie simply because any excuse for Patrick Stewart to play Professor X again, I will pay for. I love how they basically rebooted everything, yet they still find ways to have him play Professor X. So, I'm for that. All right, let's hit the next trailer, which I will be interested to hear Daniel's reaction to. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 sneak peek. So I guess this is a teaser? I don't know. It doesn't really give much of a sense of the plot. All I know is that apparently there are people who are dancers and who are not, and that Chris Pratt is pathetic. That's what I got from this trailer.
Does it make me a hipster to see this movie because other people want to see it?
So you don't want to see it because they want to see it.
You're like the Brian Griffin of the group? Is that what you're saying?
It's an interesting form of second-handedness where I want to do what everyone else is not doing. What everyone else is doing in regards to Guardians of the Galaxy only.
Why?
I don't know. It's just sort of like, I know this movie is going to pander. Like, the first movie was kind of fun. I don't think it was as good as everyone made it out to me, but it was fun. And, you know, it had some jokes. It was kind of interesting. Chris Pratt, he's not fat anymore. Hooray.
It was a solid B, I think we said here in the midside, right?
Solid, just working that B.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this movie's just going to fucking pander. The teaser pandered. It just feels like the movie where it's like all the people who hate comic book movies love this comic book movie because whatever. I don't know.
That's tackle. Interesting because that was something I was pointing out to Elliot as we were going around Disney. Is the number one property of the Marvel Cinematic Universe they seem to be marketing is Guardians of the Galaxy. They're even putting the ride out here in Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? This is the one that's going to be the enduring one.
Because it sells. I mean, they outsell the Avengers merchandise.
Yeah, but why does it sell? That's the question.
I think people, for one thing, I think people just like Rocket and Groot. I think they find Groot really charming and cute. I think, like,
that's
for me,
not a statement
I'm
on masculinity. I don't know what it is. They like the character that says one fucking word.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. They just find it cute. But, I think for me, I'm probably going to hug this movie just because I liked the first one. I thought it was fun. Sometimes you just need to have, you know, a good time in the movie, and it can't be worse than Civil War. I mean, it cannot be worse.
This movie is liked by hipsters. Not that Elliot is a hipster, but because it's self-aware. It's kind of like making fun of superhero movies. It doesn't take anything too seriously, so they can enjoy it while not having to be like, oh my God, I liked a superhero movie. They can like a superhero movie that makes fun of superhero movies. Sort of like when people like Deadpool as well. Had some good writing at some points.
So yeah, the difference between this and Deadpool is it also has the appeal to kids. So that explains why Disney's marketing it, because it has what you just said. It makes the adults feel smarter than they might not necessarily be. And it appeals to kids too.
Yeah.
I'm going to tackle this movie. Yeah, tackle. I don't know. If I'm bored, I might see it. Just for something to see. But otherwise, probably not.
It can't be worse than Civil War. I'm sorry, but it can't.
That's just such a low barrier to entry.
Yeah. It is a low bar. I know it is, but Civil War was so bad, y'all.
I mean, it was so bad. But like, wasn't the first Thor worse than Civil War?
Well, the first Thor was probably worse than Civil War, but entertaining because it was directed by Kevin Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh.
Sorry.
Kevin, that's his little gnome brother.
Yeah. Yes. Kev Branagh.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's this next one? I have not seen the trailer for this next one, so you guys are going to have to kind of school me on this one.
The Boss Baby is an animated movie from DreamWorks, I believe.
Yes.
And
you can't tell by how the baby's animated.
Yeah, I did, but you're the animation expert, so I just kind of threw it to you to make you seem important. No reaction? All right. So it's about a kid is in childhood bliss as an only child with his mother, his father, and himself. And then they bring home his baby brother, who he starts to hate. But then he finds out that his baby brother is actually a secret genius who says things like, "What the deuce?"
Close. He finds out his baby brother is actually tiny Alec Baldwin.
Yes. Which I'm not sure if that's better or worse than finding out your baby brother is actually Stewie.
So 3/4 of this trailer is a very stereotypical older child is annoyed by his younger brother story, and I just thought, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? This is nonsense. And then the little boy opens the door to his brother's and sees the baby like talking on the phone in like a full adult voice, being like, "I think the kid's on to me." And then he barges in. The baby wants sushi and coffee, and it's hilarious because he's a baby. So that's the twist. It's kind of strange. Alec Baldwin's funny. More now, calm the fuck down from the political stuff.
This is essentially, they're like, what if we took his 30 Rock character and we made it a baby?
There you go. Very good. This is DreamWorks' new thing. They just did this with Storks and with another movie that I forget.
DreamWorks' new thing is babies?
Yes, they have this baby fetish right now over at DreamWorks because they can animate the cutest, darlingest looking little boo-boo. And it's very appealing.
Isn't this basically Baby Herman from Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God. I love that. I love reference. That little punk. I like it. Oh, my gosh.
Like it looks like a 9 out of 10 reference. Good job. This movie. I didn't see Storks. Same reason. It's like, you can animate a cute baby, but the writing in DreamWorks films is just never that great. It takes their big franchise stuff to get good writing. This kind of nonsense stuff,
Wasn't Legends of the Guardians, or no, Rise of the Guardians, which one was it? Rise of the Guardians, wasn't that DreamWorks?
Yes, but that was going to be a big franchise thing, and then at the last minute they pulled all the marketing money.
Boo! That was going to be a big franchise?
That was going to be a huge thing. And then they decided to pull all the marketing. And thus no one saw it. And it's one of the best animated movies ever.
Lame. Now I'm mad and I'm going to tackle this movie on principle.
Yeah.
You know what I did see this
week? We can maybe review it next week.
What?
I watched the first two episodes of Chance. series starring Dr. House.
Yeah, I told you about that yesterday.
You did? I forgot.
Pay attention to me.
You were trying to sell me on that Pure Genius show.
Yeah, that looks interesting, actually. I'm gonna give it a watch.
What's Chance?
Chance is Hugh Laurie plays a genius doctor. So far, I'm not making this up.
Stop me if you've heard this one.
Whose last name is the title of the show.
Stop me if you've heard this one.
And so where it gets different is that he sort of gets involved with a patient. Oh, wait, who has a mystery illness? And it's not like he's trying to solve the illness per se. He's trying to solve the mystery around happening with her in her real life. Meanwhile, he's all into Art Deco furniture. I wish I was making that part up, but I'm not.
And I liked it better when he was addicted to pills.
No, and this he's addicted to Art Deco furniture. And he's also going through a divorce with his wife, and it's messy. And the show is very slow in plotting. I'll basically give it one more episode. If it doesn't get better, I can't do it. But
it sounds like I probably was in it. Elliot talking to them about this because it sucks. No, who's in it?
Cuddy. Did you watch it, Elliot?
What, Chance?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, never mind. There's a big guy. I'll never get his name. I'll never get another fucking thing.
You sound really robotic. What's going on?
Yeah, that was. Can you repeat that?
Whoa!
What's wrong
with your audio?
Not allowed to talk about this. One more time.
I'd prefer not.
You're referencing.
Am I back yet?
Bartleby? Yeah, you're back. Tell us who this guy is. I want to know.
Now I'm going to have to look it up because I can't think of what his fucking
name
is.
Well, no, let's play a game. Name things about him.
He's big and bald. He typically plays a doofus character.
Will Sasso.
David Kirchner?
Fuck, I'm looking it up now. Because I can't stand not knowing.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No.
Bill Goldberg.
I can't even find him on the IMDb. That's awful. The second main character on the show.
Fucking kidding me here. Talk a little bit about our news story here. So they said that Donald Glover is going to be Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo spinoff here. What do you think of that Star Wars guy?
Yeah. What do I think of it? I think it's better casting than what's his face for Han Solo.
Just based upon the fact that you said what's his face.
I mean, I'm sort of on board. Donald Glover. I can go with that.
Doesn't he look like Lando?
That's racist. I mean, he's a little suave and funny simultaneously as well. I think he'll do a good job. I'm not worried.
I'm looking through this IMDb for Chance, and there's like three bald guys who are big.
He's literally the very last guy on the entire page. I just found him. He was in
Brian Sampson?
Wall Street.
The Oakland police officer, uncredited?
He was in My Name is Earl.
Oh, you're talking about Ethan Suplee.
Yes. Thank
See?
You.
If you had said Frankie the Enforcer from Boy Meets World, I would have gotten that 2 seconds.
Yeah, I couldn't remember that.
Oh, now I remember this trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Hugh Laurie plays House again, kind of, a little bit, but he's a psychologist this time.
Yeah, and Ethan Suplee's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who makes a terrible Wilson. But...
Yeah, that's not what Ethan Suplee's really known for.
Yeah. So there you go. His character's name is D, by the way. The letter D.
She wants the D. All right, so last bit of
no one wants the D in this series. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Apparently not. Last bit of TV news here before we move on. The long-awaited Walking Dead series season premiere happened, and this is where we find out who Negan, the new big bad villain, kills with his bat. And this is an iconic moment from the comic books. In issue 100 of the comic books, he takes out Glenn with his barbed wire bat, and that changes the whole power dynamic of the storyline of the books, and it kills one of the characters who's been there from the beginning. But the reason I want to bring this up is I have an interesting question about the internet that I think you guys will have an interesting perspective on.
It sucks.
The show? That's not what I'm talking about. The internet sucks?
Oh, the internet.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what I want to get at here. So I'm not going to spoil what happened, because if you really want it to be spoiled, it's been all over the internet for a few months, because there is this Facebook page called the Spoiling Dead Fans. And these are people who will actually go to areas in Georgia to see where the show is filming, make connections with people on the set and locals, and deduce basically who dies and what happens in the show, and then post their predictions on their Facebook page. And they have this whole sanctimonious thing that this is their right to do, and this is a way of enjoying the show. And then they posted this week after what happened. This is what they posted. Consider this the last episode spoiler we will be posting on this page. Shiny and I have discussed this and made some necessary decisions. This page has become too much of a beast. It's just not working the way we want anymore. We are tired of being constantly hassled because of all the assholes that post our info where it doesn't belong. We have reached a point where we are too big and we need to adapt. Spoilers are about to get a whole lot more exclusive. We are done pulling our hair out over something that used to be a fun hobby. Can you explain to me how these people are any different from the assholes they're claiming are assholes for posting it everywhere? If you're going to this amount of effort to spoil a show, and you're saying that that's how you enjoy the show differently, maybe it's just because I'm a writer, but I don't think you're enjoying the show as it's intended when you're doing that. And the question about the internet is this just a byproduct of the internet?
I feel like Adam Carolla right now. Often, lately. But we need a lavender and goat's milk and baby dandelion pizza. It's like, was pizza broken? Like, was fucking pepperoni broken? And that's sort of how I feel about this. It's like, your way of enjoying the show is to stalk the actors, go to the filming locations, and then run to the internet and exclaim what you saw. Like, is watching TV broken? Creating good art nowadays. Now, fucking Walking Dead isn't good art, but people are creating good art nowadays. Just go watch it. Just go actually consume it. It's not broken.
Well, that's the thing about this, is there's this weird, like, class system thing going on here or something. And the key line of their post to me is where it says, spoilers are about to get a whole lot more exclusive. It's like basically saying, oh, we know what's going to happen, but we're going to go hide it away and only talk about it amongst ourselves.
But we're going to charge you. We're going to charge you X amount of money if you really want in on these exclusive secrets.
That's true, too. That's probably where they're heading with it.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't this a way that, like, they just need to feel smarter than the people making the shows? It's like they feel this, again, interpersonal hostility between them and the people making the shows. That they have that they're telling a story that, oh, we don't like that they're telling the story this way. We have to figure out what they're going to tell before they tell it.
Yeah, I don't really understand any of this to be true. I don't understand the concept of wanting something spoiled. And then on the other extreme, I don't understand the concept of to burn down the entire city of New York because you had something spoiled for you.
Depends on the something.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it to you this way. I will go into a little bit of spoilers. So in the comic book, Negan only kills one person. But in the show, he kills two. And I knew exactly what happened because you couldn't go anywhere, even you couldn't read normal articles about The Walking Dead without people writing what happened in it, because these people spoiled, literally down to what happened and why it happened. So if I had only seen the first person die, based upon the comic, I would have been surprised at the second one, and it would have had more of an emotional impact on me. So the fact that it was spoiled, I think I have a right to be upset. I think these people are assholes for doing this.
I mean, the part that I don't relate to is going to articles about the TV show that I'm currently watching. It's like I'm trying to watch Star Wars Rebels right now. Not quite the same thing, but it's like I'm not going anywhere to read about Star Wars Rebels. I'm just going to watch it. If something gets spoiled for me, I'll be like, eh, that's annoying. But I'll be fine.
Well, and that's honestly, that's kind of the point that the conclusion I sort of reached. It's sort of like I have to disconnect from all these communities in order to truly enjoy these shows.
Yeah. No, I fully support that.
But some people, I mean, they spoil, and I've spoken on the show about like what happened with The Force Awakens on Facebook. You know, you're reading a political post that has nothing to do with Star Wars, and then all of a sudden somebody spoils the big moment at the end, you know, and you know, in a meme.
You mean
no
Snape
less.
Kills Dumbledore?
And it's just along those levels. I mean, and you're just reading, you're just like, what the hell? Like, this had nothing to do with Star Wars. It was a political discourse, but just to be a jerk, this person did that and spoiled it. I mean, that was a really awful thing to do, you know? So I think that there are some instances where I certainly don't advocate burning down a major metropolitan area, but I can understand why people get upset about certain things.
That's a great quote.
I don't know. This maybe goes back to Justin's family's evaluation of me as being laid back. And I may just have no pulse when it comes to these things where it's like, I read about that online beforehand. It still had an emotional impact on me in the movie. I'm talking about the Star Wars climax.
Really? You knew about that? I would have been pissed. I avoided the internet for like a week because I didn't want to know what happened.
Man, I'm telling you.
No, I knew about it. I still cried. Like, it was...
You cried?
It doesn't bother me. I absolutely cry. I've cried 3 times now watching it.
Me too.
Fair enough. I guess that's like Richie getting beheaded in Highlander. I cry every time. So, like a baby. Or the end of Boy Meets World, so I can't really comment. But, no, I have to, like, that's the point I'm at. Like, I have to, like, avoid the internet to enjoy anything I enjoy. Because even if I sign on Twitter or Instagram, someone will have something about it.
Yeah.
Like, I was reading an article about, like, best football memes from over the weekend, and one of them was about the two people who died on The Walking Dead, and I was like, well, I would have been fucking pissed if I was a Walking Dead fan.
Yeah.
Like, what if you had it spoiled that John Galt was real?
It would not have bothered me at all.
I'm just kidding, because it's obvious he's real because of the first sentence, but you get the point I'm making. All right. I think I can find stuff that will bother you, Daniel. You want to know where?
Oh, boy. Where?
Reddit.
Yeah.
It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, blow, Steam, rocks, God, rest, form, on Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. These are gamers here on Reddit. If life had an achievement system, apart from the usual milestones, get married, have kids, what would be some interesting side achievements to unlock? And I'm going to add an addendum here. Don't just name side quests from the board game The Game of Life.
Damn it.
Is that literally what you're going to do?
I was going to say buy life insurance, have twins.
Were you?
Yes!
That's hilarious!
You fucker.
Well, it would have been. Golly.
I was going to see if you caught. I was going to see if you caught on what I was doing. But...
I caught on to you before you did it. Don't ever play catchphrase with us, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, that's right. It's true. We fucking dominate. Because all it is Lost references, House references.
We say non sequiturs, and people are like, how did you get that?
We literally do. Was it you who said boat and I said sun?
Yes.
And you were like, yes. was like, wow, that's fucking awesome. We're good at this.
Well, tell me what happened with the locker, Justin, and when we went to Animal Kingdom.
Yo, I want to know if this is a Disney in-joke, right? So we were going on the Rapids ride at Disney's Animal Kingdom, which, by the way, don't ever go on it. It's like you go down one really steep thing, steep hill, and like half the people get wet, and that's it. And then it's over. It's like the shortest ride ever. Like, mm-hmm. if we had actually stood in line for that ride, I would have been fucking angry. I would have ranted about it for about 5 minutes and then moved on with my life. So we had to put our stuff in a locker. And before you put it in the locker, you had to enter in what you wanted your passcode to be. And I put in 4815.
The first three numbers of the lost.
The first sequence. Four numbers of the lost numbers, which of course add up to 108. And then I fucking got locker 108.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, because Disney owns
ABC,
yeah. which is Lost. Disney owns Lost. Is that an in-joke? Was that on purpose? Was that a magic moment? Because I know Disney does this shit. That's like far too coincidental. I'm sorry. That blew my fucking mind. I was like, that's far too coincidental.
You're saying, so even if someone is already using Locker 108, if someone puts in 4815, their stuff gets just shot out like a cannon?
No, you have
earned the 108 locker.
No. It gets sucked back in unless you push the button to release it.
Okay.
Those are That's what
she said. I don't know. It seems it's coincidental, but law of large numbers says it happens at least once in a lifetime. So,
but why me? Why is it lost shit happen to me?
Because you look for it, Justin. Because
just don't fly to Australia.
I put in 4815 and got 108, dude.
Did the guy before you get 107?
Stop.
Did you look?
Blowing my buzz, dude. Just answer the fucking question.
Yes, it's an in-joke. You had a magic moment.
Yes. Don't fly to Australia. That's all I'm saying.
Right. You know, here's a reason I don't want to answer this question, the Reddit question. Because it feels too much like I'm condoning adulting, if I do. Why does it feel that way?
Achievement unlocked. Refusing to condone adulting.
Exactly. Like, what do they want? It's... I don't understand, like, side achievements, things I felt proud of doing adult are hard. Like, I moved across the country multiple times, but at, like, the end when I get there, I didn't, like, put my hands on my hips and then look around and go, yes, I have now moved across the country. Where's my badge?
But let me reframe this a little bit then.
Okay.
When are times where you would, like, do something to celebrate something you did? Do you get what I mean? Because some people are like, oh, that's really cool. We should go out to dinner to celebrate. And I'm like,
Yeah, Dan, like, you know, I don't know, like, when you got hitched, you know, that's something to celebrate, right?
Yeah, but we're not allowed to say that.
Oh, that's right. That's one of the terms.
We're looking for
side quests. I accept your reframing. But, like, the whole side quest thing where it's like, oh, I got a puppy. I'm an adult. I hate that stupid shit.
Well, no, so, I'm asking. You're accepting it. So what would be the times when you would do that?
It's things like, okay, you know, got my master's degree. Landed a big job at the Federal Society that I worked hard on. We're going to release... here in a little bit, a short documentary series about the sharing economy and what happened in Austin that we've been working really hard on, and I think is going to be really fucking good.
I haven't jerked off in like a week.
Oh, man.
You say you haven't jerked off for 2 weeks.
I know, so I'm going to make this insanely vague so that the person in question is not named at all. I know a guy once from one of my many years in school who gave up masturbation for Lent. And about 2 weeks in, basically was reporting to everyone that he could not put on his pants or underwear without getting an erection.
That's a load of shit.
Thus, now you gotta remember, this is people who are much younger, were much younger at the time. So there's that. And he was in such a fucking horrible mood all the time that basically on a daily basis, we just begged him to go jerk off.
That's such shit. I forgot to jerk off for like 6 months when I started grad school.
You forgot?
Yeah, I was too distracted. And then I was like, wait, I haven't jerked off in a really long time. I don't know if it was 6 months, but...
If it was 6 months, I would say that's a medical condition.
Or a psychological condition.
I'd say that's like fucking emergency room worthy. 6 months?
Call Dr. Drew. I want to know what Dr. Drew says about that. I don't know if it was really 6 months.
He would say you have incredibly low testosterone. What's going on?
Maybe I do. Maybe that explains a lot. Although I can't picture me with high testosterone.
God, me neither. Fucking Hitler would have nothing on you. Destruction you would cause.
All right, so do we want to move on to the next question?
Yes.
By the way, saw Bill Burr, which was an excellent cap to a week in Boston by seeing Bill Burr in D.C. Bill Burr did a wonderful bit on why Hitler is overrated as a mass murderer.
Sorry, I'm Googling what happens if you don't masturbate for 6 months.
No one's gonna bite on that. Fine.
I'll keep my
Bill Burr premise to myself.
No, I like it a lot. I'm really looking forward to the special from everything that you've told me. Here we go, Cora. What are the health side effects of not masturbating?
No, it's not so much that one could not masturbate for 6 months. I totally get that physiologically. I forgot to masturbate for 6 months. That is a wildly different thing. Wildly different thing. And it wasn't because you had taken a fucking vow of celibacy or entered the seminary, the oddly named seminary, but it is because you forgot because you had started grad school.
Aren't they seminary
fluids? Medical
condition.
Seminal fluids, but yes. I was making the tenant, loose connection there.
I can't tell where the article, the question starts and the answers begin.
Can we move on with our lives?
Yeah, you want to do the next question here? Next Reddit?
Yes. Have
next Reddit.
To do.
What is the single worst feeling? Apparently it's not masturbating for 6 months.
Wow. Elliot?
The worst single feeling.
Being single?
Nah, it's not too bad.
Wow,
I think that...
Facetious.
I know. I think the worst is, you know, guilt. And particularly unearned guilt. You know, when you're guilty over things that you really shouldn't be, but you've conditioned yourself to be guilty over them.
That's probably the objectively correct answer. But I have a different answer.
Well, that's unless you're personal. That's a non-personal answer. Do you get what I'm saying?
What is the worst feeling to you?
That's how I interpreted the question. It can go either way. I mean, I think it's a great answer.
I was speaking personally. You know, I mean, when you're younger, especially when I was younger, there were things I was guilty about my sexual orientation, guilty about lots of things that really were not things to be guilty over. You know, so that's a really horrible feeling, you know, to be guilty over something that you don't have control over, that you feel condemned for when you really had no say in the matter, you know, and how it's a really terrible way to feel.
Good point. Very good point. So I have a different answer, though, which is there are three states of being.
Whoa.
Talking about.
Whoa.
And are you masturbating now to make up for the 6 months, or what is going on? In the feeling I'm talking about, the first state of being is sort of like blissful ignorance, and then the next state of being is, or the final state of being is moving to action. but there's a middle state of being in between these two called the moment you realize you fucked up. To me, is the worst possible state of being. Oh, I hate that feeling so much. Because before, you've done something, and you think, oh, I've done that thing. The thing is now done. And then you realize you're fucked up. But then the after feeling is, okay, how do I fix this? How do I move on? Let's get going here. The feeling of, oh, I can't believe I just fucking did that. That is the worst feeling.
When you wake up next to a gremlin.
Luckily, it is it's fleeting. To limit the amount of time you're in that, unless you're a woman, you have to dwell on it. But
I was going to say, I think it depends on the person there.
I, in my life, have at least learned to limit that feeling to a very short period of time. But, oh, does it suck.
That's a good one.
Justin?
Those are both good ones. Mine is different than both of yours. The feeling I hate is being disconnected from the world. And what I mean by that is, and this is something I'm thinking a lot about recently, it's very easy to sort of like get into your own world and like do your own little thing and have your own little like slice of life. But to me, it really gets me depressed and down when I think of like, this is it. This is all I'm going to do forever. And I'm just a little ant in the ant farm. And I have my little box as part of the apartments in the city and blah, blah. Even though I love the big city, like, just the idea of being, like, if you do the cross-section of the building and you're one of the ants inside that building, because you've made that your own little world, you made your scope so small, that to me is the worst feeling.
Paging Dr. Drew.
Wow. Thanks, guys. That made me feel good. Which leads into the next Reddit. Serious. Redditors who don't believe in an afterlife, how do you deal with existential crisis and the thoughts of eternal oblivion?
I don't.
Also the objectively correct answer.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie. I mean, there have been times where I've thought about sort of like, what happens after I die, and there's, you know, if you dwell on it, I think it can be frightful. Have to be, because the whole point is that you actually won't have any experience. Like, the fact that makes it frightful is you're projecting your own consciousness onto what it's like to be gone forever, except that you won't have consciousness. Feeling in and of itself frightening. But you were not conscious for billions of years before you were born. Went by pretty quick, didn't it? So, like, the point, I think, is that there's no point in worrying about it.
Well, this that reminds me of a conversation.
Only what you can, yeah.
A conversation we had once, where I said the same thing Elliot says, where I don't think about it for the reasons you just said. But then I did say to you, Daniel, and I don't know if you remember this, that what freaks me out is, like, when I'm on my deathbed, the idea that that might be the last thing I think about. Do you remember we talked about that?
Yeah. No. Nope. I thought I did for a second, and then I realized that wasn't you.
Oh, so you don't remember what you said then as the answer to that?
Although I want to know if I was witty, insightful, or horribly wrong.
No, you were insightful. You said that apparently your brain is flooded with a rush of endorphins right before you die.
Oh, right. Yeah, right, exactly. The experience that everyone has about seeing the light where they die and, like, their life flashing before their eyes and whatnot, that's actually a verified experience, because what's happening is your brain is basically drugging you. Assuming you die a natural death and it's not some horrible, torturous, whatever. But the point is, that, your brain is basically pumping you with, I guess it's dopamine. Maybe a scientist will. And essentially, you're just going to feel euphoric before you die. So that's comforting.
I think that might even happen in, like, horrific stuff. Because the one time I thought I was going to die when my car was spinning out in the middle of the night, like, I had a feeling of, like, yeah, I did the best I could. I had a good run. Like, I thought I was going to die. That was my thought. Like, I wasn't scared. I wasn't upset. I was just like, Yeah, you did the best you could. You tried.
And your brain was like, pump the endorphins.
I mean, that sounds like what you're talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Indeed.
So, do people chase that high? That's an interesting question.
You know what's more frightening to me, actually? Question? Oh, yeah, I remember the question. What's more frightening to me, and I'll let Elliot answer in a second, is actually the thought of the singularity. The idea that we could download our consciousness into a computer. What the fuck would that be like? That seems like an existential hell to me.
Because you can't actualize anything in a corporeal form?
Yeah. You'd be aware, but have no physicality? Holy shit.
So hell is to be one of those heads in Futurama?
Right.
Or Doctor
Elliot,
Who?
Did you have any further answer other than you don't?
No. It's not...
No, you fucked up.
What?
The correct answer to what he just said to you is, I don't.
I don't.
There, leave it at that. See how brilliant that is?
Modern day Bartleby.
That's brilliant. Hey, do you have any further answer besides you don't? I don't. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that Justin and his penis apparently don't have a cozy relationship.
We didn't for a long time. Elliot?
I learned that Justin, like I said, needs to not fly to Australia from Los Angeles anytime soon.
That's good advice, because I was actually considering planning a trip to Australia. So,
oh, you can go to Australia, just don't go from Los Angeles.
Just don't go LA to Sydney, you're saying?
Yeah, don't go LA to Sydney. Go from like Dallas or something.
Doesn't flying to Australia just sound like the biggest chore in the world? Here, sit in this 2-foot by 2-foot cubic space for 24 hours.
Can we make flying to Australia a euphemism for going down on a girl?
Down under, is that it?
Yeah, you're going
it
down
under.
It takes
way too long. No one really likes the trip.
And you're trapped in a small
entertainment
space.
Is horrible. That's right. All they're serving is fish day and night.
Fish. Fish. Can't really move your neck all that much.
Mm-hmm. Some woman keeps coming by asking if you want peanuts. It's weird. What did you learn, Justin?
I don't know. I'm too distracted. I learned that I did indeed have a magic moment. And I will evade reality on this one, so fuck you if you try and say otherwise.
Well, every week, ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you have a magic moment here at the Midside. And that's why we need your support to give more of these moments to more human beings like you and the guy next to you and that girl across the street and your neighbor with the limp. All of those people deserve the Midside.
I feel like you just named the cast of House.
Kind of. Yeah. And I feel like we should give it to them. You in particular should give it to them, because the most important thing you can do on a weekly basis is tell someone about the show. Tell someone about the show. We get messages all the time where it's like, yeah, saw your show shared by a guy on Facebook. Now I'm hooked. Love Zack Snyder. Woo! Because that's the people who love Zack Snyder know that you can't end sentences without a woo. So we really need you to help us spread the love. Snyder fans especially. We just had the Batman v Superman Snyder edition last week. Share that with some folks, especially those folks who are sort of like closeted Snyder fans. Those people who secretly love 300, even though their friends and family call them racists for doing so. Share with them. It's really important. You can also send them to the Facebook page, the Twitter account, the Instagram, Snapchat, all at the Midside. Or you can go to themidside.com/podcast and check out all the previous episodes. We've done episodes on everything. You can tell us which story officially hit peak farce, if it wasn't the one about virtual groping from today. Gentlemen, Patreon. Don't we love Patreon? Don't we love our Patreon supporters? Patreon is a place, in case you're unfamiliar, where you can actually choose to give us money.
And then we'll virtually
money
grope you.
For what we do. Put that as a reward.
That's actually not a bad marketing idea.
There you go. Live marketing talk here on the Midside. You can choose to give us money, but not just like random money for doing nothing. Like, it's not a subscription service where you give us money and some months we go to Tahiti. No, no, no. It's you choose to give us money when we deliver content. So if you want to give a dollar per episode, that's how it works. So if we don't put out an episode, you don't have to give us a dollar. But if we do, we trade. And it's awesome. It helps us keep the lights on. It also helps us do some fun fundraising, or sorry, not fundraising, promotional stuff. Batman v Superman edition. So thanks so much. We love and adore you and want to make more of you. Thanks to Liberty.me folks as well. And we'll see you next trip.
To be clear, we would not turn down any trips to Tahiti that any of you would want to buy for us. And just, we wouldn't turn it down. Just saying.
That's not, not going to say no, though. Like, we're going to make more of you.
So if going down under is going down a whim, what's a trip to Tahiti?
It's a magical place.
I was going to make that reference. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.